This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, we don't really know how big the core of Mars is, how thick its crust is, what its mantle is made out of, etc. So that's what we're after in this case with the InSight mission.
You're listening to the Science Focus podcast from the BBC Focus magazine team. We're the UK's best-selling science and technology monthly, available in print and in several digital formats throughout the world. Find out more at sciencefocus.com or look out for us in your app store.
Hello and welcome to the Science Focus podcast. I'm Alice Lipscomb-Southwell, the production editor of BBC Focus magazine. Despite the success of missions such as Opportunity and Curiosity in exploring the surface of Mars, we still know relatively little about what's going on beneath the surface of the red planet. NASA's InSight mission, which is scheduled to land on the Martian surface on the 26th of November, is hoping to change all of this. Commissioning editor Jason Goodyear spoke to Bruce Bannert, the principal investigator at the InSight mission, about the project's history, its objectives, the technology it will be using, and what studying the internal structure of Mars can teach us about the formation of planets in general.
Okay, so we launched the spacecraft back on May 5th from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, and it's been following a trajectory to Mars since then, and it's been operating just about flawlessly in space. We've had really good luck with it. It's been very responsive, no idiosyncrasies like some spacecraft have. And so we've had a very smooth ride. It's going to take about 6.5 months altogether to get to Mars. And we're set to land on Mars on November 26th of this year.
So for those who don't know, it's going to, in total, travel something like 500 million kilometres to reach Mars. Is that correct?
That's right. And if you actually look at the way that the orbits line up, you know, we're actually kind of moving alongside the Earth, and we're just kind of going closer and closer to Mars as we kind of orbit between Earth and Mars. And when the orbit of the spacecraft intersects the orbit of Mars, you know, bingo, we're there. But in the meantime, like you said, we travel a long way, about almost halfway around the sun as we get to Mars. And when we get there, we're going to be traveling about, 20,000 kilometers per hour when we hit the top of the atmosphere. And so then the excitement starts when we start to have to slow down. We'd like to kind of get from that point to get to kind of 0 kilometers per hour when we get to the surface. So that's going to be an exciting 6 or 7 minutes.
Sure. So I think one of the things that certainly blows my mind, and I think probably a lot of our listeners too, is how on earth do you navigate remotely the lander from Earth that incredible distance?
It's actually It's as close as you can get to magic and still be science. So you see the big parabolic dishes, you know, out in the desert in California, Spain, and Australia that we use to communicate with spacecraft deep in space, and they're able to pick up the very faint radio signals from those spacecraft, and just by measuring the precise timing of those signals, you know, when they arrive, and the precise Doppler shift, the frequency shift due to the velocity of the spacecraft with respect to Earth, they track that and maintain a record of that from Earth to Mars, and are actually able to locate where the spacecraft is within a matter of meters, you know, in space, and its velocity to an accuracy of millimeters per second kind of accuracy. And by tracking that and by extrapolating it forward, we can make the very small corrections in the trajectory using the very small rockets on the spacecraft to tweak it a little bit faster, a little bit slower, a little bit left, right, up, down. Of course, none of those terms actually mean anything in space, but they have the equivalent terms to figure out, you know, which direction and it's going and which way it's pointing. And so by the time we get to Mars, we have to hit a target that's about 15 kilometers wide and just a few kilometers high at the top of the atmosphere. And that sounds really incredibly impossible to me, but they've shown that they can do it over and over again with previous spacecraft. So I'm putting my faith in them for this time.
Yeah, so as you say, when it actually arrives at Mars, it's going to be going at a fair clip. So what sort of technology are you going to use to make sure that the landing is safe?
Well, we use three different basic methods to slow the spacecraft down to land it on the surface. First, when we enter the atmosphere, the spacecraft is enclosed in what we call an aeroshell, which is something that completely goes around it. The front part of it is a heat shield, very much like the Apollo capsules that brought the astronauts back from the moon. So when it gets to the atmosphere, it just has kind of almost a flat shield that it hits the atmosphere with, and that gets extremely hot from the air friction, and some of it actually burns off, ablates off of the heat shield. And that slows it down from about, like I said, almost 20,000 kilometers per hour down to a few hundred kilometers or a few thousand kilometers per hour, at which time we release a parachute. At that time, it's still going almost twice the speed of sound, so it's still going pretty fast, but we have a parachute that slows it down in the upper atmosphere and brings it down to about maybe 1 to 2 kilometers above the surface. And we have a radar that's kind of pinging down, measuring the distance to the surface. And when we're about a kilometer and a half or so above the surface, we release the parachute and turn on our retro rockets. And then we take the last kilometer or so down on the retro rockets. As we get close to the ground, we get slower and slower. And then by the time we touch down, we're hoping to be going no more than 5 or 6 kilometers per hour when we hit the ground, about the speed of a quick walk when we actually touch down to the ground.
No, that's amazing. So whereabouts on Mars are you going to land, and why was that area chosen?
We're landing in an area called Elysium Planitia. It's a very flat, broad volcanic plain just about on the equator of Mars. We're only a few degrees off the equator. It's actually not very far from the Curiosity landing site. We're about 200 or 300 miles north of Curiosity. Curiosity's down in a crater. We actually wanted to be in a very flat, open area to make our landing as safe as possible. And that's really why we chose it. We chose it for landing safety and for surface operations. Landing safety, we need a spot that's fairly low elevation-wise on Mars, so we have plenty of atmosphere to slow us down. Mars is a very thin atmosphere, so you need to get a lot of kind of air between you and the ground to help the parachute slow you down. So we need to be low, we need to be flat and rock-free, so that when we actually touch down on the surface, we don't have any obstacles or hazards that might flip the spacecraft over. And we need an area that the weather is relatively benign. We don't want a place where there's a lot of winds and storms, because that's obviously not a great thing to land through. And finally, we want to be able to operate this spacecraft for a long time on the surface. It's solar powered, so we want a nice balmy location. So we picked an equatorial region that has lots of sunlight all year round. And so it turns out that if you start, you know, putting all those different constraints on it, there's very few places on Mars that were actually hospitable to our landing. And this turns out to be actually a really good one for fortunately for us.
So you just mentioned there that it's going to be operational for a full Martian year, which is that's about 2 Earth years.
That's right. The science that we're doing, which haven't had a chance to talk about yet, but we're doing seismology primarily to probe the depths of Mars, and to do a seismic experiment on the interior of a planet, you need to accumulate a lot of different Mars quakes, a lot of different signals. And so the longer that you stay there, the more of those signals that you can pick up. And Mars is not as active as the Earth, so we figured out we need at least about 2 years to get enough Mars quake signals in order to be able to draw the conclusions that we need to draw about the structure of the interior. That means we have to last not only through a Martian summer, which is actually harsh enough. That's sort of like living in Antarctica. But we have to survive a Martian winter as well, which is really challenging. And so we've designed our spacecraft to be able to survive the conditions of a full Mars year and get the time on the surface that we need to do our science.
So you mentioned that one of the key instruments on board is a seismometer. So can you tell me a little bit about that, how it works, and what you're going to be using it for?
Okay, so a seismometer is an instrument that we actually use very commonly on the Earth, and it measures vibrations of the surface of the Earth. And those vibrations can be from all kinds of things, from, you know, if you walk by, you can feel the vibrations, or if you have a lot of wind blowing around, you feel vibrations. But the important thing to us are vibrations that are set up by Mars quakes. Which are just like earthquakes, except they happen on Mars. So on the Earth, if you have a quake, which is a sort of a cracking and moving, a quick motion of the Earth's crust, it sends out waves, which are similar to sound waves, but they're traveling through the rocks instead of through the air. And when those waves reach the seismometer, the seismometer can sense those vibrations, and it's an extremely sensitive instrument. We can actually sense vibrations that are sort of on the scale of an atomic radius, and so we can pick up waves on the Earth that have traveled all the way through the Earth. Here in California, we routinely pick up earthquakes that have happened in Japan, in Southeast Asia, in Africa, and these quakes send out these signals that are affected by the rocks that they travel through. So just like when you have sound waves that bounce off something and give you an echo, that echo tells you something about how far away that obstacle was that the sound waves bounced off of. And we use the same kind of techniques inside the Earth, looking at these waves as they bounce off boundaries such as the boundary between the rocky mantle and the iron core of the Earth. And we can actually look at how they bend through the Earth. They actually refract the way light waves refract through a lens. And we can go back and figure out what the properties of the material that it moved through, what are the boundaries are, and put together sort of with a lot of different quake signals going through a lot of different directions, we can put together a 3D representation of the deep interior of a planet. And so right now, we don't really know how big the core of Mars is, how thick its crust is, what its mantle is made out of, et cetera. So that's what we're after in this case with the InSight mission.
Sure. So you kind of mentioned some things there, but how much do we actually know about the internal structure of Mars today?
Well, we know that it's similar to the structure of the Earth, and that we know that it has to have an iron core because otherwise we wouldn't be able to match the density of the planet that we know from its orbital characteristics. We know that it has a crust similar to that of the Earth because of the types of rocks that it's made out of, and we measured those the composition of those rocks using both, you know, orbital spectroscopy and some analysis on the ground using our rover instrumentation. But we really don't know what the details of that structure are, and that's sort of key to how the planet evolved, because it starts off as sort of a uniform ball of a material that's very similar to carbonaceous chondrite meteorites. But then those rocks evolve, they melt and recrystallize into different forms. And so on the Earth, you know, we have a very different planet than we have on Mars. We have a very different planet than we have on Venus. And one of the things that we want to find out or understand is how these planets evolve from very similar beginnings to very different current situations. And Mars is kind of a perfect laboratory for that, because on the Earth, most of the evidence from the very early stages of the Earth have been erased by plate tectonics, by mantle convection, and so forth. Whereas on Mars, the early processes happen, and then pretty much things shut down, except for a little bit of, you know, geologic rearranging of the rocks on the surface by volcanoes and meteorites. And so we should be able to look at the internal structure of Mars and extrapolate that to the very early structure of the Earth and understand how Earth got to be a habitable planet with lots of life, whereas, you know, Mars, Venus, and, you know, the other planets really went down different paths.
Right, so by studying the internal structure of Mars, we can actually find out a lot more information about planetary formation in general.
Yeah, that's really our goal. I mean, what we really want to do is use Mars as kind of a window into the past of the Earth. And so our real goal is to better understand the planet that we live on. And it seems kind of counterintuitive maybe to go to another planet to learn more about our planet. But in scientifically, you think of Mars as, you know, a different experiment that you can get, you know, a different set of results for. And then by looking at the differences, we can actually sort of figure out the processes that brought them to where they are today.
So another of the instruments on board is a heat probe, which is actually going to burrow into the soil and take the planet's internal temperature. So what can we learn from taking the temperature of the inside of the planet?
Well, a planet is in some ways, as scientists, we think of a planet as a heat engine. And so, you know, all the activity that you see on the surface of the Earth, you know, the building of mountains, the carving of valleys and canyons, all that kind of activity is driven by this heat engine inside the planet. So we have hot rocks rising from the depths. We have cold rocks, you know, sinking back down. And in the meantime, they're pushing around things on the surface. They're melting magmas, causing plate tectonics. And so all this kind of activity is driven by the amount of heat inside the planet. One of the things we want to understand is how a planet loses its heat, how the Earth is still a very, you know, relatively hot and vigorous planet, whereas the Moon, Mars appear to be cooler and less geologically active. We want to actually understand, you know, where Mars's heat engine is today, and again try to extrapolate that back to the early formation and evolution of the planet to understand how these planets diverge, how they're similar, and how they're different, and what makes them different.
And kind of one of the other main instruments is called RISE, the Rotation and Interior Structure Experiment. So could you tell me a little bit about how that works and what you're hoping to discover with that?
Well, the way that RISE works is actually, we use exactly the same techniques that we use to navigate the spacecraft between Earth and Mars, except now the spacecraft is a lander. It's sitting on the surface of Mars. So as we're tracking its position, we're actually tracking the rotation of the planet. So we're watching the planet rotate as we're watching the lander move with the navigation system. And so by watching the planet move for about an hour, it actually traces out a little bit of an arc as it rotates. And so we can then figure out where the North Pole of Mars is pointing at that instantaneous point in time. And by tracking the North Pole of Mars, we can actually watch it wobble. The way a top wobbles when you spin it, and the wobbling of the planet is tied very closely to the distribution of mass, you know, where mass is concentrated. So we know most of the mass of a planet is concentrated in its iron core. You know, iron is about three times more dense than normal rocks are. And so by figuring out how much of that mass is concentrated toward the center, we can actually figure out the size and the density or mass in the core of Mars. And that's a key parameter for a lot of things, such as the magnetic field generation, related to the rate at which heat can be lost from the planet, because the size of the core really is an important boundary condition on heat loss mechanisms, and on the composition of the core, because whether a core is solid or liquid, which we can also determine from this wobbling, is determined mostly by, you know, what else is dissolved in there, what other elements besides iron, such as sulfur, oxygen, carbon, and so forth. And so we can actually figure out, you know, what the temperature of the core is by figuring out what its density is and relating that to the melting temperature. So the RISE experiment is really a key experiment in figuring out the size and the composition of the Martian core.
So there's also cameras on board. So I was wondering, do they serve any specific scientific purpose, or is it just because taking pictures of the surface of Mars is really cool?
Well, the main purpose we have for our cameras is to figure out how to put our instruments on the surface. Because when we land, our seismometer and our heat flow probe are bolted onto the top of the spacecraft. And so that's not the best place to measure, you know, planetary properties. So we really need them down on the ground in the dirt. And so we have a robotic arm that can pick them up off the deck and place them on the ground within about 2 meters of the spacecraft. But we need a nice flat spot with no rocks on it, so we have these cameras on board in order to map out that space in front of the spacecraft and find a safe place to put our seismometer and our heat flow probe down. And then when we're done, we will definitely, you know, take a look around and see what the area looks like, because it is always so cool to find, you know, another spot on Mars and see what it looks like.
So when can we? When do you think we'll be getting some results coming through?
Well, it turns out exploring the surface of a planet is kind of a slow motion process. It takes a long time to do things because you have to do things really carefully. You don't want to make any mistakes. So once we land, we'll actually have some pictures within the first few days. We'll have a set of pictures coming down, but it'll take us about another 2 or 3 weeks to sort of map out that area in front of the spacecraft and decide where we want to put our seismometer. We hope to get it down sometime, probably somewhere between Christmas and the end of January, depending on how difficult the location turns out to be, and have our heat flow probe down maybe, you know, 2 to 4 weeks after that. So we're thinking about getting science data next spring is when we'll probably start getting it down. And then, as I said, you know, we need to accumulate a number of Mars quakes before we can start making any inferences about the surface. But we'll be taking pictures before then. We also will have a weather station on our lander that will be measuring the weather on Mars, which should be very interesting, and also measuring the magnetic field of Mars. So we'll start to get some scientific data down pretty quickly. But in order to get to our main goals of understanding the depths of the planet, that's going to take months to years to finish up.
Sure. So just as one sort of final question, so all things go flawlessly, everything works perfectly, what would be your dream discovery?
Oh, wow. My dream discovery would probably be, you know, once we have the seismometer on the surface and all checked out and everything is quiet, to have a really big Mars quake come along, you know, sort of a magnitude 7 style Mars quake, which sets the whole planet ringing and bounces waves off the crust, off the core, and allows us to really, you know, get a really precise picture of the deep inside of the planet, which is something that I've just been, you know, sort of trying to work towards basically since I was in graduate school and first starting to try to study the activity on the surface of Mars. And I kept on just running up against a brick wall of not knowing how thick the crust was, which was sort of a key parameter in all my calculations. And so this is going to be sort of a lifelong a goal of mine, a lifelong dream come true, really, to finally understand, you know, what the thickness of the crust and the size of the core is on Mars. And I think, you know, the first time I see an encyclopedia article with those numbers in it and realize that, you know, this is it's our mission that actually, you know, generated those numbers, I think that's going to be, you know, just an incredible feeling.
That's brilliant. Well, thanks very much for taking the time to speak to me, and hope everything goes well with the mission. And I'm sure I speak for all of us when I say that we'll be following it very closely.
Well, thanks for your good wishes, and just go ahead and go online on November 26th. We'll be broadcasting the landing live from here at JPL, and tune in and share the excitement with us.
Will do. That sounds great. Thanks very much.
That was Bruce Bannert talking about NASA's InSight lander's mission to map the inner core of Mars. Thank you for listening to the Science Focus podcast. In our December issue, which is on sale now, you can find out much more about the Mars InSight mission, which will soon be arriving at the Red Planet. We also investigate the Gateway Space Station, which is currently under development. And of course, there's much, much more inside.
Thank you for listening to the Science Focus podcast from the BBC Focus magazine team. We're the UK's best-selling science and technology monthly, available in print and in several digital formats throughout the world. Find out more at sciencefocus.com or look out for us in your app store.